Oh, what a beautiful sound that is. That's a robin. According to a recent national survey on birding in the United States, Wisconsin ranks second in the nation for bird watchers. Are you a birder? Well, this hour is for you. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We will talk about the popularity of bird watching in Wisconsin, its importance, its fun, what we are seeing these days and what we hope to see, and we're welcoming your questions, your sightings, and the reasons why you like birds. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us. Of course, tweeting us at Joy Cardine Show. Let me welcome our guests. Very happy to have with us Ryan Brady, research scientist with the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources Bureau of Wildlife Management. He is the bird monitoring coordinator for the Wisconsin Bird Conservation Initiative and chairperson of the Wisconsin Society of Ornithology's Rare Birds Records Committee. Ryan, hello.
Well, hello, Joy. Good morning.
It's good to have you back, and you are joining us from Ashland, is that correct?
You bet.
And we also have here in the studio, our Madison studios, another guest from the Wisconsin DNR. Georgie Steele is a wildlife biologist and planner with the Wisconsin DNR. Good morning. Good to have you here.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks.
Well, the way I understand it, Ryan, you're more the bird nerd, right?
That's pretty accurate, yeah.
And, and you're more bird conservation, Georgie? to some extent.
I'll go with that.
Yeah. You're both bird watchers, though, as well as being experts on birding in Wisconsin. You both love to bird watch. Why do you love birds, Georgie?
I find them endlessly fascinating, beautiful, interesting, just inspiring. They're a window into the natural world. They just open up a lot of beautiful natural places. They're just a wonderful
window to the world.
And I think
that you beat that, Ryan. Why do you love birds?
Well, I think the number one reason I love birds, I mean, obviously it connects us really well with the natural world, but for me, I think it's just that they're everywhere. There's lots of them, lots of different varieties. You can never really get bored with them, and you really don't have to go bird watching, as the report that we're going to talk about indicates. They are in so many different habitats, in so many different places, that they really just kind of find you as you're going about your daily activities. And you know, if you just have your eyes open, you can't really not be a birder.
Yeah, that's
true. To be honest.
Well, according to this report, I am a birder, but I have traveled more than a certain distance to try to see a particular bird, and I do put up somewhat of a significant effort into attracting birds to my backyard. So that's the definition, Ryan, of a birder, according to this report?
According to this report, it's someone who actively takes a trip a mile or more to look for birds, or someone who is, you know, closely observing or trying to identify birds in their backyard. What it excludes, somewhat conservatively, is, you know, the person who's just kind of out and about and incidentally notices birds in the way that I mentioned them. Those people were not considered birders, but in some ways they may be.
Yeah. And this report by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service said that 33% of Wisconsinites over the age of 16 are active birders, and that we are second in the nation when you take into consideration the proportion of our citizens who are birders. Does that surprise you at all, Ryan?
No, to be honest, that number doesn't surprise me. I guess maybe it is a little higher than I would have guessed if you just kind of asked me, but we're just a state that's so rich in birding, in our connection to our natural resources, and there's a whole slew of reasons for that. We've got this great tradition of you know, kind of a I'll call a natural ethic, so a connection to the land, and that starts back with, you know, even some of the early pioneers in this sort of stuff with, you know, like John Muir and Sigurd Olsen and Aldo Leopold, of course, and more recently Gaylord Nelson, founder of Earth Day and Wisconsin governor and so forth. So, you know, we've always had kind of this tie, I think, with the natural world, and this birding aspect is a natural extension of that. We've got over 400 species of birds. We're on major flyways. We're a little bit of east. We're a little bit of west. We're a little bit of north. We're a little bit of south. We've got millions of acres of public lands, wonderful diversity of habitats, and just time and again, whenever the chance comes up for Wisconsinites to shine in the birding community through either citizen science or recreation or hobbies, we just, you know, we step to the front. We rise to the top in terms of our connection with birds and our passion for protecting them.
Yeah, and why do you suppose birding is so popular in Wisconsin, Georgie?
I would have to agree with what Ryan said. You know, we're a state that's just blessed with lots of diverse natural resources, wonderful asset in our public lands, and I think it's opportunity. I think it's natural heritage, and you know, birds are very, very accessible, and there are a lot of people that can have access to them in their daily lives. We have a great tradition of nature enjoyment, of science, and environmental activism. So I think all of that combination makes Wisconsin rise, like Ryan said, to the top when it comes to bird activity, birding, and nature enjoyment.
Yeah, this report, not only did it rank Wisconsin second in bird watching, Vermont, by the way, was number one. We're going to have to try to do something to take over. But Vermont was number one. But it was also the importance of birding. This is good for the economy. That's what the report is finding, Georgie?
Right. Mm-hmm. The larger report showed that there's a significant contribution to the economy from outdoor recreation in general, but birding in particular, because of the expenses that people incur both when they're taking a trip, so trip-related expenses and also equipment-related expenses. People buy binoculars, they buy field guides, they buy other equipment, and so all of this, and also there's for the backyard around the home birders, like you and myself and probably Ryan, we have bird feeders. We buy bird seed. That's a very significant influx into the economy from all of these people that are so interested in birds and want to have them around. So it does add up to, I think, more than what people would guess.
Yeah. And, I mean, if you're going to also be gassing up the car and driving a couple of hours to see that rare bird that happens to be somewhere else in the state, you're going to be maybe even having lunch in that community and
exactly,
that sort of thing. So, which I can speak from experience. I have a sister and brother-in-law who have been trying to sight some of the rarer birds that are around Wisconsin right now. But let's talk a little bit more about that equipment, because there are people who are listening right now who are probably active and experienced birders. But what about would-be birders? Ryan, what do we need if we want to start this pastime?
Well, the good news is you don't need a whole lot. Generally, when you start out, you want, at the very basic level, you probably want a pair of binoculars. It doesn't need to be the best pair of binoculars. It doesn't need to be the most expensive pair. But you probably need a pair of binoculars in most instances. A spotting scope can be helpful, but when you're starting out, that's maybe an expense you're not, you know, going to want to make right off the bat. So maybe save that for a couple years down the line, or find a friend who may have one that you could use for a little bit, because that spotting scope will help bring many of the more distant birds into view, especially water birds. And then a basic field guide. There are many online resources now where you can go and look up the identity of a bird, but really having an in-hand guide out in the field with you that you can compare what you're seeing to what's in the book and so forth, that can be very, very helpful. So those are your two basic necessities. You know, and having some bird feeders is a good way to start, too, because then you're going to bring some of the more common birds into you. And the key with kind of getting going in this is not to be overwhelmed by the 400 potential species you would see, because, oh, my God, where do I start? But really kind of taking it in blocks, dealing with, you know, maybe 5-10 species per outing, or even per week or per month, depending on your interest, and just, you know, knocking those off and coming to understand those, what they look like, how they behave and so forth, and then moving on to the next batch and slowly kind of building through time your resume of birding skills, so to speak.
Yeah, what do you suppose, Georgie, turns someone from, I love birds, I'm watching them at the feeder in the backyard, to I'm going to go to Ashland to go see a snowy owl? You know, I mean, what turns you into that active birder where you want to see this bird in person and that you'll even travel some distance to do it?
I think for me, and just to add to what Ryan said, I think when you have somebody else around you that can get you, that can bring you in, who's more experienced, that can really, really help you become a better birder. I mean, there is a very steep learning curve at the beginning. I was a teaching assistant here at the university for a number of years while I was in graduate school, and my students used to think I had magical powers because I could just glance at a bird and know what it was without even getting a very good look at it. But that sort of experience, if you can have somebody with you that can help you on that steep learning curve, and I think that's what often gets people much more engaged in birding, is when they can be around other people who can help them, who can give them tips, and who can take them places and say, hey, by the way, did you know this is an incredible snowy owl year? I'm driving up to Ashland. Want to come with me? You know, when you feel part of a community and can join other people that have these interests and can help you develop your interest, that I think really helps somebody go from just a casual backyard birder to somebody who's a lot more engaged.
Yeah, and I have not seen my snowy owl yet, by the way. I've been trying to, and I don't have to go to Ashland.
Julie, you still have some time. You can do it.
Well, I mean, we have talked about this before, but that is one of the unusual. Maybe this winter now it's not so unusual, but we are seeing a lot of snowy owls in Wisconsin when we usually don't. What's going on, Ryan?
Yeah, this has been the winter of the snowy owl, really. It's been pretty quiet bird-wise otherwise. So we're experiencing this tremendous eruption of snowy owls. This is an irregular southward migration that comes every handful of years in various magnitudes, and this year's is especially large. We've documented almost 300 snowy owls across the state. There very well could be more. And they have just been the talk of the town with lots of folks out there. Why are they here? No one knows exactly for sure, but the primary reason that people think they're here is that there was a very large boom in lemming populations up in the far north, the Arctic tundra, where these birds nest. And lemmings are small rodents that the snowy owls eat. When there are a lot of lemmings, the snowy owls can raise lots of babies. So they might produce 6, 7, or 8 babies from one nest, whereas in a year of bad lemmings, they may only produce 1, 2, or even none. And so then you've got all these baby snowy owls, and they all need somewhere to go, and they flush southward. And so that's the leading hypothesis for why they're here. They've been statewide, and right now we're just at the kind of the precipice of them heading northward again. So there could be some birds already on the move north, but there's been plenty still on their winter territories, and I would really expect in the next week or two you're going to start to see a lot more departure of the birds, and towards the latter part of March and early part of April will be kind of the main period when they're getting out of here, and some will linger farther into April and even May in some cases.
So this is your chance, Troy.
It is. It is kind of comical because I have gone out 3 different times, even though, you know, a friend or somebody else saw 6 of them yesterday. I wouldn't see any of them.
Oh my God.
Joy, you need to go out with that friend.
That's right. You know what? I'm coming to Ashland tomorrow. Really, I am. And we're going to do the ice caves on Saturday. So I'm coming to to Ashland. Where should I look in Ashland, Ryan, to find that snowy owl?
Well, the two best places to look, one would be at the local airport that is just a mile or so inland from the lakeshore, and the other part would be to look along the Ashland lakefront. Often the birds will roost out on the ice during the daytime, and then they will come on shore in the late afternoon and evenings, usually right around dark, to hunt rodents and other prey along the lakeshore. So that would be your two best opportunities.
Well, there we go. I think I'm going to be staying at a place near the lakeshore and arriving around dusk, so we'll look
there
for
you
them.
Go. Perfect.
I'll let you know, and I'll post my snowy owl if I see it on our
Please
Facebook
do.
Page. Well, let's take a short break. We are talking about birding in Wisconsin. Are you a bird watcher? What got you interested? What's the appeal for you? What birds are you seeing these days, and what birds are you looking forward to seeing? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Well, that is the hoot of a snowy owl. We are talking about birding in Wisconsin. Talking about this because a recent report named Wisconsin second in the nation for the proportion of citizens who are birders. So we thought we would use this opportunity to talk about why this is such a popular pastime in Wisconsin and talk about what we can see if we are birding in Wisconsin. We have two guests with us, very happy to have with us, Georgia Steele, a wildlife biologist and planner with the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, and Ryan Brady, research scientist with the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources Bureau of Wildlife Management. He's also the bird monitoring coordinator for the Wisconsin Bird Conservation Institute and chair of the Wisconsin Society of Ornithology's Rare Birds Records Committee. And we have lots of callers. Let's go to Rosalyn in Stratford first. Hi, Rosalyn, you're on the air.
Hi there. Hey, Joy, you don't have to go all the way to Ashland to see a snowy owl.
I know. I can see one just a little ways away from Madison, but I have been unsuccessful. Are you seeing a lot of them?
I saw one in January. I was headed out. I'm 5 miles west of Stratford. And one morning I was heading out my driveway in my car, just got onto the road headed south, and here a huge white bird flew across the road and was kind of headed over to the southeast from me.
Well,
it was beautiful.
How exciting was that for you?
Very. I think I was in shock, and of course I have a camera that I carried in my purse, but of course I couldn't have gotten it out in time to get a good picture.
Well, you're really lucky. You weren't even looking for that snowy owl, Rosalind.
No, I wasn't, and I saw him from underneath too, because he, kind of up over my head, out to the front of me.
Did you realize that it was a snowy owl right away?
Yes, I did, because I'd never seen such a huge owl or bird before, and all white like that, or mostly white.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Western Stratford's Western Marathon County, if I'm correct, and that Western Marathon County, kind of Highway 29 corridor that runs from Wausau over to Eau Claire and Menominee area, basically the northern edge of our real open agricultural areas at the southern edge of the Northwoods, that area has just been chock full of snowy owls this winter. It's been one of the major hot spots where there have been a lot of birds seen. And there have been reports of, I think, upwards of 11 birds maybe seen in a single day. All the way up there, which is just really remarkable. So very, very exciting. And I think Rosalind hits on a good point there, and that is kind of her connection to this bird, having not noticed one before. And even non-birders really connect with snowy owls in a way, because they're just so magical, if you will. I mean, they're this big bird. They're often active during the day. They've got these bright yellow eyes. And in a way, they kind of connect us with a place that many of us will never get to. They're coming from way up in the Arctic to a place that most of us won't go. So we kind of have this wilderness connection with them that they bring.
Well, you just explained one of the reasons, Ryan. I can't really explain why I want to see a snowy owl so badly, but I do. I mean, it's not like it's just I really see beautiful photographs of them, but I want to see it myself, you know, with my own eyes. And it's something magical about it. You know, another bird that the bird that my sister and her husband have been. It's eluded them so far, and they've taken like 6 trips to the Buena Vista grasslands in central Wisconsin, is the gerfalcon. Apparently this isn't, there's just one guy there or so, and lots of people are going to central Wisconsin to try to find him. Is he still around, Ryan?
I haven't seen any immediately recent reports, but I would not be at all surprised if it was still there. They have very large, that's a very large falcon that holds a very large winter home range, meaning it covers a very large area during the wintertime. So it may not always be in the same place. In fact, I would say that Buena Vista bird has been one of the most reliable gerfalcons that I can think of. So I would say still give a shot. You know, hit the kind of routine places, find the prairie chickens. That seems to be what that bird is honing in on over there. And you still may get it yet. I would guess that bird to depart under normal situation, you know, mid to late March would be expected.
You know, someone posted on Facebook, on a popular Facebook page. It's, in fact, Bob on Facebook says, if you're talking about birding culture in Wisconsin, you would be remiss not to mention the fantastic Wisconsin Birding Facebook group. And that's right. They're, I guess you can ask to join this particular group, and we'll put a link on our Facebook page if you want to check it out. Just beautiful photographs and sightings of birds all over the state of Wisconsin. But someone posted on there, I don't remember her name, but she was looking for the gerfalcon, and she was unsuccessful and thought, well, I'll stop, and I see a snowy owl. It's a kind of famous snowy owl that's also in that region. And she was taking pictures of the snowy owl when the falcon came into the photograph and started kind of harassing, or I don't know what it was doing, to the snowy owl. And so she was really lucky. I mean, it just by chance, this falcon decided to, you know, I don't know, just make his entrance and start harassing the snowy owl. What is that, some territorial thing going on, do you think, Ryan?
Exactly. Yeah, those are, it's kind of a territorial dispute over, you know, potential prey. And that gerfalcon says, hey, this is my area, you know, and you're bothering me. So I'm going to kind of dive at you a few times and harass you and try and get you to move on. And these interactions between those two species probably happen quite frequently where they typically spend their winters, which is in mostly in southern and central Canada in a normal year. So probably not an unusual event, but certainly very, very lucky and very, very unusual to get to witness it and to snap such great photos that she had.
Yeah, we are talking about birding in Wisconsin and bird watching and the birds that we are seeing now, and we'll talk some more about what hopefully will be migrating very soon. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Pam in Kellogg, Minnesota is with us. Hi, Pam.
Good morning.
Morning.
I am a campground host and have always loved birds since I was a child. I love them so much I even have to have in my house. I have canaries and parakeets and finches. Aww. And so I take my grandchildren camping with me and teach them my love for birds. But now that I have preteens, they seem to be target practicing on them, which is really getting me unglued. And how would you, I mean, I've tried everything. How would you discourage that?
Discourage? Is this just doing target practice on the birds? I don't, are they hunting them or what, Pam?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
What kind of birds are they targeting?
Well, woodpeckers, because my son thinks they damage the trees, and I just...
Well, that's so probably not legal, is it?
It's really not. No, it's against the law.
Which led me into the other question, why are we hunting the mourning doves now? Because, you know, when you let them start hunting one bird, what keeps them from hunting every bird?
Well, I don't know if we're really going to get into the hunting policies necessarily, but maybe I can ask in terms of what are some of the threats to our to the birds in Wisconsin, Georgie. Maybe you can address just some of the threats that are out there for birds.
Well, there are a variety of threats against birds. Certainly, the loss of habitat is a major one, which affects birds all over the country. Other threats include invasive species that affect their habitat, invasive species in the sense of non-native predators like cats, feral cats. Migratory birds are affected by collisions. They collide with windows, with communication towers, with mm-hmm. wind turbines. Birds that migrate are also at threat during passage, meaning, on their way north or south. Once they leave Wisconsin, there are threats all the way, down to their wintering grounds, and they can also be affected by habitat loss on their wintering grounds. So, migratory birds face a variety of threats during their entire life cycle. So that those are probably the major ones that are affecting birds and all wildlife, really.
Yeah. Well, is there anything, I don't know, I guess I just didn't want to turn this into a debate over hunting birds, but is there anything that bird lovers can do to help protect them?
Definitely, definitely. Mm-hmm. Just become aware of them is one thing. I think the more that people appreciate birds, learn about birds, know about birds, the more that they love them, the more they'll be motivated to do something about them. Certainly, feeding birds in the winter, this has been kind of a tough winter, I think, for birds, although, birds are certainly adapted to survive cold weather, the ones that stick around. But certainly, feeding birds in the cold is one thing people can do. People can participate in conservation organizations that work on bird conservation. They can join clubs. They can donate. People can keep their cats inside. That's a big thing they can do. They can, put. There are a lot of ways to mitigate collisions. If you're finding that birds are striking your windows, there are a variety of things that folks can do.
Joy, if I may kind of add some shameless plugs on top of that.
Sure.
folks can really, two things come to mind in addition to what Georgie says. And one of them is later this month in Oshkosh, the Wisconsin Bird Conservation Initiative, who we work for in addition to DNR, we're hosting our annual meeting. It is a Bird City Wisconsin Summit. And if you go to our website, wisconsinbirds.org, you can find the agenda and the registration information. But that conference will be full of talks on ways to help birds and how to not only help them in the wilds of the North Woods, but also just in urban and suburban areas or even your backyard. So I would really encourage folks that have an interest in just kind of seeing what they can do to help birds and what is happening on a state level to help birds to come and participate in that meeting. The other thing I would add on top of that is WBSI, with our partners such as the Natural Resource Foundation, also have a Great Wisconsin Birdathon, and that is an event that takes place during the month of May that really serves as the primary fundraising mechanism for priority bird conservation projects in Wisconsin. And so I would encourage folks to go to the Natural Resource Foundation's website, find the Great Wisconsin Birdathon. And this year's planning is just about complete. Teams are forming, and folks can donate or they can go birding to raise money themselves. And it's just a great way for folks to contribute directly to bird conservation here in Wisconsin.
Well, we'll try to also post some links to those websites on our Facebook page. Talk a little bit more, Ryan, about bird cities. I know there are people trying to get their cities designated as bird cities. What does that mean?
Well, the bird city concept is pretty similar to the tree city concept, where if you meet certain criteria in providing various habitats or support for birds within your community, then you can get this stamp, so to speak, or this recognition. of being a bird city. In turn, that kind of brands you as being a bird-friendly community and will no doubt benefit you in that sense, as we've already talked about, the economic, the billion-dollar economic impacts of birding. But then also, obviously, you're doing great things for birds. These bird cities can have very important roles in educating the community about birds, getting youth involved in birds through festivals or other celebrations, doing good habitat work that benefits birds, bird monitoring to help us track populations, developing a nest box trail for bluebirds or something similar. So there's all sorts of things you can do to meet the criteria. They're really rather basic. And in turn, the birds benefit. And when we have birds around, as we've been talking about already, we are all happier people.
Yeah, we really are. Let me take another call. We have Mary in Washburn. Hello, Mary.
Well, good morning.
Morning.
Good morning. My question this morning is, I'm really interested in birding, but I don't know much about it. And I'm wondering, are there any events or anything that goes on in the Northwoods that I can go and learn about how to bird or what birds look like or just be outside and you know, figure that out?
So, Ryan, we'll get you Mary's address and you can go help her out.
I know, she's right down the road from me, apparently.
Yeah. So what about just, for anybody, you know, she's looking for more in the Northwoods, but if you don't have that friend who knows how to do it, are there, classes?
Yeah, there's a number of different avenues. Step one is kind of maybe look towards for a local bird club. You know, and in our case, we have a group called the Shawangan Bay Birders, and so that's a bird club you might get involved in. Local Audubon groups are also popular. Madison Audubon is a big one. Up here we have the Shawangan Audubon chapter, and so you can get involved with them to get involved with bird watching. At a broader scale, there are various nature centers. I think of places like the Urban Ecology Center in Milwaukee or Beaver Creek Reserve in the kind of central northwest part of the state. So you can find some of those that may offer some classes. And then at the state level, the Wisconsin Society for Ornithology would be my primary recommendation. Go to their website, and you can link this to joywsobirds.org, and they have field trips and presentations and conferences and all sorts of things that can connect you with birding. And Mary, I would very much suggest, here in Ashland and in the Washburn area, we have the Shawangan Bay Birding and Nature Festival that's held in mid to late May. I think it's the 15th to 17th of May this year, and there are just tons of ways to learn about birds and other wildlife groups during that festival. So go to Bird and Nature Festival.
Oh, thank you.
Birdandnaturefest.org, and that's where you'll find the Shawangan Bay Bird and Nature Festival.
Thank you, Mary, for the call. Well, of all things, we have a caller from the Wisconsin Society for Ornithology on the line, Carl in Fox Point. Hi, Carl.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. Well, Ryan just hit it out of the park in doing what I was going to do, which is to suggest that to second what Georgie said early on, was if you want to become a birder, hang out with some other birders. And joining an organization like the Wisconsin Society for Ornithology or Audubon or one of the local birding clubs, one of the things that WSO is trying to do is serve more as an umbrella organization for birding groups throughout the state. And we've adopted a monthly calendar that we send out to our members to alert them to birding meetings and bird clubs all over the state. And I think that's I appreciate Ryan giving us a plug. And I just suggest that people find somebody else who's already into bird watching and hang out with them. I know that's how I got my start.
Yeah. So Carl, before we let you go, what was the most exciting sighting you've had recently?
Most exciting sighting I had was something that will be sort of pedestrian in another month or so, but I saw two pairs of northern pintailed ducks the other day on Lake Michigan near Harrington Beach State Park, and those were spring migrants. Those are not birds that are around here during the winter, so despite what the weatherman seems to be telling us, spring is coming. If ducks like pintails on the way back. And Dan Panetti, who runs Wild Birds Unlimited in Mequon, reported the other day that he saw a sandhill crane flying in. So, you know, this spring will arrive, and I think spring is the season that that not just birders, but everyone looks forward to the most, but birders particularly. It's great days are ahead. So,
thank you, Carl, very much. And Georgie, what about you? I mean, what are we expecting to be coming with spring?
I think the first, just like Carl said, cranes and waterfowl are the first things that people tend to look for. They're the first birds that start to move in. In terms of other signs with spring, I think one thing that I have noticed a lot in the past maybe 2 weeks is that birds are singing. That is just a sure sign. I know that the weather is cold and doesn't seem to be letting up too much, but the cardinals and the house finches are singing. And to me, that just like Carl said, it's inevitable. It's coming. Just hang on. It's right around the corner. But in terms of those first birds that people are likely to see, especially as maybe some of the ice starts to let go in some inland lakes or along the shore, is waterfowl. So ducks, geese, maybe some swans will be kind of the first things that people see. And, you know, cranes start to come back and shorebirds after that. And then some of the songbirds start to come in a little bit later in April.
Mm-hmm.
And Joy, those waterfowl are really maybe the best group of birds for beginners to really take to. So folks who are looking to get into bird watching, really take advantage of this early spring when you have all these ducks and swans. These are big birds. They're colorful birds. There's enough diversity, but not too much to really confuse the heck out of you. And they tend to sit still, and when you have pockets of open water, that concentrates them,
right.
You know, so when you do have some ice. So folks should get out and take advantage of that.
We are talking about birding in Wisconsin and the birds that we are watching these days, the ones that we can look forward to arriving with spring. And we're welcoming your questions for our guests. We're welcoming any sightings, you know, anything interesting that you've seen recently. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is the Ideas Network. Well, that's the call of a chickadee. And we are talking about the birds of Wisconsin, birders in Wisconsin, what we are seeing these days, what we are looking forward to seeing. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our discussion is prompted in part by a recent report that named Wisconsin second in the nation for the proportion of citizens who are birders. So we thought we'd talk about why the state is so crazy about birds and get some advice for would-be birders and hear from birders. What's the appeal to you? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. And of course, it's always fun to hear about what you're seeing or maybe one of the most interesting sightings you've had. Lois in DeForest is with us now. Hi, Lois. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you answered my call because I was very fortunate, me, my son and I, to see on two different occasions bald eagles coming in, flying in into our backyard. We have the Yerhare River down below us. It's a very narrow stream of water, but I can't leave my window because I might miss another one. I also wanted to just say one thing about helping birds. I leave my flowers, some of them, standing in the wintertime because they have seeds that the birds use for natural food besides my bird feeders. So I thought that might be one thing people can do, take down maybe some of the old spent, stalks, but leave some for the birds. Mm-hmm. Hyssop is one really popular plant.
Georgie, do you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, she brings up a great point. There are many, many things that people can do in their backyards to provide bird habitat, particularly if they're using native shrubs and flowering plants that will draw in lots of different kinds of birds because they host insects or they bring in nectar feeding birds, hummingbirds. So there are lots of resources out there for folks that want to learn more about how they can birdscape their yard. Lots of great resources. You know, the idea being to provide habitat throughout, you know, the entire year, where you have stuff that flowers early, then a little bit later you have some shrubs maybe that provide fruits in the fall. There are lots of resources out there, no matter what size your yard is or what your exposure is. There's stuff you can put out there. And she's right. Those kinds of natural foods will draw in birds. And then, you know, how thrilling to have bald eagles in your backyard. They do like areas where there's open water because they can fish. And so maybe that's why she's seeing them. There may be some open water there, but wow, what a great backyard bird.
That's great. I love birdscaping, that term, too. That's cool. Yeah, Ryan, there are lots of bald eagles cruising around Wisconsin, too, aren't there?
Yeah, the extensive ice conditions has really meant a lot of them have gotten concentrated in what available open water there is, and so various places in southern Wisconsin, wherever there's open water, the lower Wisconsin River, for example, and a lot of times those provide really great viewing opportunities. I would expect any time now that those concentrations will kind of break up. Some of our resident pairs of bald eagles are already tending to nests and in some cases may have already started laying eggs. And the bulk of our migrants will really start moving here during the month of March, such that by the time you get to the early part of April, most of the migrant bald eagles that are here during the winter time will have headed north again.
Let's go to Beth in Green Bay next. Hello, Beth.
Hi. I just wanted to make a comment. Every year my dad and I have a contest to see who can see the first robin. And I was kind of shocked that this year we saw one the first week in February. We just don't see them that soon.
Yeah, and, you know, I've been told that there are robins. Some robins will just stay in Wisconsin all winter. So you're nodding your head, Georgie. Is that robin was probably here all winter?
Yes. Robins are interesting birds that way. They will stick around if we have a mild winter. I think there are a lot more visible. People see them a lot more. A winter like this one, they're not around as much, but where they can find, they're more fruit eaters. So where they find some areas that have some late fall berries, and maybe some areas where there's a little bit of open water, that doesn't quite freeze, they will be around. I remember seeing some myself, sometime very late into the fall, and winter, they were still around.
Yeah. Well, so are some of those robins, Ryan, saying, what the heck, we made the wrong decision to stick around here this winter?
Well, some of them probably are, but most of them are going to fare pretty well, provided that fruit source is available, which they really key in on. And they'll start heading north here soon, and I would contend that the first sign of spring maybe isn't seeing a robin, but it's kind of seeing that robin poke around on your lawn looking for worms.
Yeah.
You know? And then you know that you've reached a happy place in terms of the weather.
So what is the bird you're looking forward to seeing most, Ryan, this spring?
Oh, boy. We all have different benchmarks for kind of what the official spring is to us. Some people it's the crane, some people it's the robin, some people it's the red-winged blackbird or a meadowlark or the American woodcock, which is an upland shorebird. They're all benchmarks for me. The beautiful thing with spring migration is it occurs in this kind of protracted wave where you start out with the short-distance migrants and you kind of have this slow trickle of eagles and ducks and then it builds and then you get a whole other suite of insect-eating birds and maybe some seed-eaters that come in April, sparrows and flycatchers and some other blackbirds. And then, you know, you've kind of fine-tuned yourself and you're ready for kind of what is May. And in May is the peak of migration in all its glory, all these colorful birds, the shorebirds, the warblers, the grosbeaks, the ruby-throated hummingbird, the Baltimore oriole. And so it's all great to me. And I look forward to all of it.
Yeah, Terry in Cuba City emails, I used to hear meadowlarks along every mile of county road in southwestern Wisconsin. Now none. It seems that rural residents and farmers have started mowing all of these country roadsides. Mowing everything in sight is wasteful and harmful to nature, he goes on. Can you tell us anything about that, Georgie? Is the meadowlark in fewer numbers because of less, I guess, roadside meadows?
The meadowlark is sort of the poster child of grassland birds in general that have really declined in the past few decades, largely because of habitat loss. These are birds that need grasslands that are idle, native prairie or idle grasslands that are not intensively managed, and we've lost a lot of that habitat. So that's a common refrain from people that say, yeah, we used to hear meadowlarks a lot and now we don't. And certainly the high price of corn and wanting to get, you know, two or three hayings out of a field, you know, and coming through and haying when the birds are nesting is not conducive to meadowlarks at all. So that's certainly a very common thing.
Sean emails, last summer north of Minocqua, I heard the call of a loon for the first time ever. That call was life-changing for me. I guess that gives me a little bit of a shiver because that call of that loon is something really, really special. Ryan, when did the loons come back?
Well, the loons are interesting because as anyone who lives on a lake that has loons probably knows, they tend to show up the day that lake opens up.
Yeah.
I mean, they really are uncanny in that ability. They take some scouting flights heading north to look for open water, and if there isn't any, then they'll retreat back. And there's just a lot of drive for them to get to that territory before someone else takes it from them. So they got to get there right away and get on the best territories. And so usually up here in the Northwoods, that's around April 10th to 15th, depending on what kind of spring we're having, somewhere in that neck of the woods when they'll come back. And yes, that call, as all the campers can attest to out there, you know, you just, or those living at cabins on lakes, you just can't beat kind of the wilderness quality, kind of like a wolf howling that comes along with that loon. It's very comforting.
I wish we had more time, but Mark in Rosendale wanted to say that he's seeing a lot of cedar waxwings, and he thought that was kind of unusual for this time of year. Very briefly, Ryan, is it that unusual?
I've seen quite a few sightings, and maybe a slightly above average in terms of numbers, but not entirely unusual. It could be related to the same reason why we have quite a few robins around this winter, and that is lots of fruit left over.
Okay. And I guess I'm going to give you a last word, Georgie. Is the future bright for Wisconsin birders and birds?
I think definitely. If people get out there, they get to know the wonderful state that we have, all the birds that we have, and all the opportunities to be engaged and to help support bird conservation, yeah, the future is bright.
Wonderful. Thank you both so much for being with us. This was fun.
It was a pleasure. Thanks.
Thanks, Joy.
And I'll look for that snowy when I get up there, Ryan. Thanks a lot. Ryan Brady, research scientist with the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, and Georgie Steele, also a wildlife biologist and planner with the Wisconsin DNR. Thanks to Christy Taylor for producing and directing the program. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.